My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. So my birthday is approaching just a few more days, and I guess I'll have 31 years if that works out. If I make it, you know, it's looking kind of dicey. Oh, well. We're going to talk about step three. I'm going to talk about step three a little bit. I want to sort of lay out some ground rules, tell you a little bit about myself, a little bit about my experience. And, you know, I mean, the truth is anybody who knows me knows I could talk for hours. You'll discover that during the fourth hour of this talk, which is going to be sensational. But you know, so it is sort of daunting to sort of try to figure out how I'm 62 years old, married 30 years. Four kids, six grandkids, self-supporting most of the time through my own contributions. And it's kind of daunting to, it's a privilege to always be asked to speak, and I've been asked to do that many times, and it's a blessing for me. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy passing on what I have learned. I feel that it's something that I have a relationship with God today. I'm going to talk about that. It's something that I feel that I do, which is of service to him, and a gift back for the gift I have of sobriety. And so it's a joyful experience for me to talk to people. It's also a daunting experience because I feel that I'm, you know, responsible to just be as transparent as possible and, you know, just tell you the truth, wherever the truth may lay, which has gotten easier for me, actually, as I've gone on years, the less I tend to worry about whether or not you like me, which is a real addiction for alcoholics. It's really probably one of the deepest addictions, the addiction to want to be loved, and to the extent that we'll prostitute ourselves and our morals just so other people will think kindly of us and not reject us. And we have a lot of addictions, a lot of old ideas that we're not even aware of. We find ourselves 5, 10, 15 years, months, whatever it is down the road, as a result of horrible decisions and, you know, serious mistakes, finding ourselves in groups of people in situations that seem absolutely impossible, wondering how we made all these decisions which seem so right when we first met them, never to understand that our greatest intelligence is driven by things like a desire for people to like us, or desire to not be alone. And not even understanding that, it just sort of like is something that we feed upon that we don't even know because our alcoholic life seems the only normal one, or alcoholic thinking seems the only normal one. So thinking selfishly and self-centeredly and being scared is just the normal route of an alcoholic, not even understanding what's going on as you're making the decisions that seem so rational. And sometimes it's only years and years down the road after going through a lot of, you know, bumps in the road, suffering and just difficult experiences while you're following directions and looking at God that somehow you get some sort of insight, you know, as to what's really going on with you and some sort of discernment. And this is all being done while you're dealing with an individual who has an attitude of being defiant and not wanting to hear the truth in the first place. So I'm just going to share with you, and this is just, let me tell you something, this is not AA's opinion, this is not your opinion, I'm not trying to tell a story that's going to please everybody, I'm not here to tell a story that's not going to offend anybody, I haven't run it by some people for political correctness. I have a point of view, I'm a strong believer in God, I happen to be a Christian, I'll try to keep that out of it to a certain extent, you know, but I am here to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not here to put down any group. I used to go to many, many step meetings, follow people around, and this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. And I used to follow the people I was attracted to because I wanted what they had, even though I didn't even understand what they had, but it was attractive to me. And I thought maybe if I hung around them and be in their presence, sort of like osmosis, it would sort of slough off on me. And then I realized later on down the road that I actually had to do something, take some steps, do some things, read some books, and do some stuff. And I did that, and things changed for me. But years and years down the road, I ultimately realized that I was right in the first place. It really has to do with who you hang out with. That if you hang out with the right people, I was told, you know, the person you'll be 5 years from now will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And without any question, the books I read depended upon the people I hung out with. And those were the conversations I listened to, and those were the point of views I established, and those were the people I watched like a hawk to see how they reacted to the thing and how they thought about things, and to the extent they reacted and thought a certain way and had certain opinions, I adopted like a good alcoholic those opinions, and thank God I chose to hang around spiritually, morally, and emotionally healthy people. Bill Wilson said that the next frontier in Alcoholics Anonymous is something called, the next frontier, as far as he was concerned, was getting past something called unhealthy dependencies, of which as an alcoholic I am chocked full of them. Of course, I don't think they're unhealthy because, like alcohol, like drinking alcohol, I like them and they feel good, and if you try to take them away from me, I get mad at you. And I don't want to hear this stuff, you know what I mean? I just want to get rid of the alcohol. You know, when I came to AA, like everybody else, I joined the initial club that everybody joins in AA, the thumb-sucking crybabies, that fellowship, which I stayed in for about 15 years. And if you don't know what that's about, you haven't been to enough discussion meetings, you know, talking about my mother, my sister, my grandmother, my this, that, and the other thing. And I certainly didn't come in on the Fellowship of the Spirit, and I've learned that there are basically two books in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a big book, but it's really two books, two separate books. There's a big book where you read it and you think it's a book about not drinking. And many people read the big book as a book about not drinking. That's what you think this organization is about. And if that's what you see in this organization, then that's what this organization is for you. And you can actually read the not drinking book. You can read the not drinking book, and you can stay sober for many, many, many years. And then after 10 or 15 years, you can slip. There'll be a chink. You'll never have a relationship. You'll be on your 15th divorce. You'll have all sorts of things going wrong. Or maybe not. Whatever it is, you'll live like the novelist says most people, a lonely sort of existence. And the bottom line is, but you can stay sober. Because in this meeting, in this group, in AA, worldwide, the number one thing we talk about, well, the number one thing you talk about and a lot of people talk about is not drinking. No matter what, not drinking. Your ass falls off not drinking. There's no problem so bad that a drink can't make it worse. And at the end of every month, we celebrate not drinking. You can be a serial rapist, a murderer. You can kill 15 babies and a banana. It doesn't matter. If you haven't had a drink in 15 years, we're giving you a medallion. Come on up. You know what I mean? So it's very easy to think of Alcoholics Anonymous as a not drinking organization and read this book like it's a not drinking book. And just do this thing one day at a time, and just how's it going? I'm hanging in there, and just go from meeting to meeting like you went to bar to bar, you know, basically somehow, you know, just sort of making it, and get pats on the back while you go, and die, having never been rocketed into fourth dimension of existence and experienced much of heaven. And you can also read the other book that's in here, and that's a book about connecting with God. You can read about connecting with God, who's going to do for you what you cannot do for yourself. Who's going to do unbelievable things for you. Being all-powerful, he's going to give you everything you need. Everything you need, as long as you stay close to him and do his work, perform his work well. That if you see to it, your relationship with him is right, great events are going to come to pass for you and countless others. Remarkable things are going to happen to you if you make that decision. All sorts of remarkable things will happen to you. You'll lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. You will be reborn. If you just turn everything over to him. And you just burn the idea into other people's minds that the sobriety in your life doesn't depend upon things or people. Let no man say that he needs his wife back or his job back or anything like that. It says nonsense. It says the only thing is to trust God and clean house, and the only thing that's important is your relationship with God. And you can join that organization. You can read that book, and it's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are consequences to your personal life and to how it turns out and the consequences to your life and to how your life turns out, and I don't think this is a dress rehearsal, is going to depend on what book you choose to read. And sometimes what book you choose to read is not necessarily going to depend on your intelligence. As a matter of fact, because of our crazy thinking and our crazy mind, my best thinking got me in there, sometimes your best thinking on your best day will point you in the wrong direction. And the intelligence can't come from here. Sometimes it's got to come from up there or somewhere in here, or more than likely it's got to come from another individual. that you see in that other individual, that you can't stand them, you hate them, and I'll tell you one thing. If you hang around the right people in here, they're going to tell you stuff that you're going to hate them for. You're going to find yourself going up to people saying things like, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. Because if you suffer from a horrible disease, which takes you in all sorts of insane directions, and you come into a fellowship of people, of, you know, the St. Well People's Anonymous, made up of people that suffer from the same disease, which have to do with not only selfishness, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-centeredness, you know, and we usually don't think so, you know, self will run riot, and our chief characteristic is defiance, and we put us all together in one, this is the same group, by the way, that was meeting in the Alibi Lounge, you know what I mean? That's our waiting room, you know, and you get this group, and talking the same stuff, thinking the same things, doing the same deals, you know, but drinking coffee instead of beer. All sort of talking about doing the stuff in the big book, but secretly in their mind saying, how can I do as little as possible and get away with it and just get the stuff that I know is really going to make me feel good. But if you're lucky, if you come in here and you're really seeking sincerely to change in the image and likeness of God, which the sixth step says is the separation point, you know, a man who repeatedly tries to turn himself into the image and likeness of God, even though he's perfect and it may be impossible, that's what we should for. If that's the deal, you will find your person, you know, your we. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You will find your person or group of people that will fit into your we. It's not going to be everybody in the group. There's going to be a lot of people smoking and joking, telling you all sorts of insane things. All the insane people that are out there, they're in here today. You know, we got all the groups in here. You know, we got the not God groups, or I don't want to hear that crap groups, or, you know, I'm spiritual, not religious groups, putting down religion when the big book says, you know, we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. We encourage church membership and synagogue membership and things like that. It's all in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you see people with chips on their shoulders, putting down religion, putting down God, getting mad at people for talking, you're not seeing sobriety. What you're seeing is the antithesis of sobriety. You're seeing alcoholism at its prime, masked as being cool and being smart and being intelligent. You're seeing everything this book is against. You're seeing a lack of humility. And you're seeing a lack of open-mindedness. You're not seeing the second step. You're not seeing people that are actually reading this book. So I'm just going to talk about my experience, and I'm going to read a few things from the book. You know, and those of you who have actually read the book probably realize that I don't really know much. I've actually gotten dumber, and you should have seen me when I first came in. I've actually gotten dumber since I've been sober. I don't know much, but it's amazing how well your life can go if you don't think. You'd be surprised how little thinking you have to do. You know, when I used to think a lot, things were going bad, but and I know I'm not smart because all my sponsees tell me I don't understand. So I've taken a poll and I'm not that bright, you know. And I want to read a few things from this. Is if you're going to read a book besides the big book, I seriously suggest you're going to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. People these days, and I did, and everybody does, unless you have a very strong sponsor who's been around for a long time and is steeped in this deal, you know, get their ideas of what this program is about from the fellowship. This is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the fellowship oftentimes is wrong. It's nice to have fellowship. It's nice to hang around in bars. It's nice to have people that, you know, make you feel good and make you laugh. You know, laughter is fun. Being, you know, not being lonely is fun. Having a room to go to is fun. I think it's a necessary thing. But when you start getting serious and you stop drinking the milk and you start having to eat the food and you want to become an adult in here, and you're not standing in front of the not drinking door, you move over to the rock of the fourth dimension door. You're going to really want to get serious about this stuff and find out what this is really about. And, of course, what it's really about is the stuff that most people don't want to talk about or even hear about in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, what we'd rather have is just use this as sort of like group therapy, you know, and just go through our hard days and just come here for a little relief, a little relaxation, sort of like dump all the crap on the table. We feel a little bit better because we feel we talked to somebody, we're used to that. It's like psychiatry and stuff like that, and we walk away and we think we're actually growing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can do that for 20 years not realizing that you've never even grown up. You've never even become an adult. You're just using AA as a psychiatric couch, you know, and you're still the same person you were when you walked in here. You just got all those nice little fancy chips or medallions. But if you really want to see what this thing is all about, you really need to pick up this group, because it's impossible to really understand the context in which all these writings are when they talk about your creator and things like that and where they came from, unless you understand exactly what was going on. Because our book says, the thing you read, it says if you, not only does it say if you want, we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps, it says at the very beginning, we read it before every meeting. Where is it? How it works. Where is how it works? In the book, 58. Here's what it says. I think this is what it says. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Which I think means something like, if you do what we did, you'll get what we got. But their path had nothing to do with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because A was started in 1935, and the big book was written in 1939. So they wrote this after they had 4 years sobriety. So if you really want to understand what their path was, if you really want to get into it, if you're not scared to find out what their path was, in the 4 years that they were doing prior to reading this book, you'll read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Since we're on the third step, which quite frankly I think is probably the most important step, even more important than the first step. That's just my opinion. You know, you don't have to get mad at it, you know, and that's just what it is. I think, you know, listen, we got a lot of people. Everybody who comes into Alcoholics Anonymous, in almost 31 years of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know whether this is absolutely true, I can't remember seeing a person who's come to Alcoholics Anonymous who hasn't stopped drinking. I'm just telling you that. I don't remember seeing one person who's come to Alcoholics Anonymous who hasn't stopped drinking. There's probably some, but I don't remember seeing them. Now, you may be thinking of a guy who came into AA and stayed dry for about a week or a month or 6 months and then went out and died. And I've seen that happen. I've seen people come in here who can't stop drinking, and because of the force of the fellowship, because of what they get in here, whatever it is, they stop drinking. And then I've seen them drink again. After 3 months, after 6 months, after 20 years, they've drank again. And whenever they've drank, they were always 5 seconds before they drank, physically sober. You see, you could say, well, if you're drinking and you got it in your system, you know, it's like a craving, but whenever these people have drank, after 5 years, after 3 years, they were always, right before they drank, physically sober. But they weren't mentally sober, and they weren't spiritually sober. And that depended upon them, because our book says the only defense is going to be the defense you have based upon your relationship with God. So don't tell me the third step isn't important, because if it wasn't important, that they wouldn't be mentioning God through the entire book. They wouldn't say things like, on page 29, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language, which is what I'm doing. I always feel whenever I'm in an AA meeting, whether it's here, whether it's going to be next month, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin at their convention talking there, no matter where I am. Listen, I love a good drunkalogue. I love a good drunkalogue. I think they're very important for newcomers, even old-timers, to hear a drunkalogue from somebody who's been there so they can say, this guy's just like me. That's important. But you know something? I heard drunkalogues in bars. Everybody likes to be entertained. Everybody likes a comedy. And then I drank, and then I drank, and then I drank. But that's important, but it's not what the deal is. It's not where the meat and potatoes is here. Where the meat and potatoes here is not then I drank, then I drank, then I drank. Where the meat and potatoes here is sobriety. And sobriety is all about God. And that's why it says each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Now, as I say that, 10% of the room, somebody in here is saying, I don't want to listen to this crap. There are going to be people mad. There are going to be people upset because that's the nature of this disease. Understand, the disease wants you dead. The disease doesn't want you to get this thing. The disease gets upset. If you just think of the disease as a person, I find it, quite frankly, sometimes helpful to do that. If you think of the disease as a person, the disease doesn't want you to hear any of this thing. And that's part and parcel of the alcoholism. Part and parcel of the alcoholism, the disease we have, is to try to make sure that you never get the answer and somehow, some way, throw darts at anybody telling the truth in here about what's going on here. That's the disease. That you will never be hurt by somebody telling you the truth or by listening to the truth. You know, we tend to be closed-minded and blind, and we don't want to hear this stuff for a million different reasons. There's a lot of different reasons. But let me read page 101 from Dr. Bob. This is a great book, and I just want to read this one part. There's so many good parts in it, but this is just one I found. And then I'm going to read a few more things and talk a little bit about some experiences. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees. By the way, when AA started, you didn't get into AA unless you didn't get into an AA meeting unless you did the third step, on your knees in front of other people. You would do it, sometimes they do it in a place called the upper room. They called it I'm doing the steps now in a place called the upper room, you know. And those biblical students know the upper room was where the Last Supper took place. But they would get down on their knees and give their lives to God and give the drinking problem to God. And then they would be allowed to show their sincerity. Do you think that would be a humbling experience? You bet it would be. I'll tell you one thing. After that experience, when you had a group, that's what we call you didn't have a lot of suspects. You had real prospects. You know, that was that. You know, when you have to go through, when somebody says you want to be in the group, get on your knees, give your life to God in front of these people, say these words, and you do that, I'll tell you one thing. Wasn't a lot of argument in those groups about God. Wasn't a lot of people putting down God. Now, you may not think, you may say, well, I wouldn't have done that. Well, that only means that you didn't drink as much as I did. All that means to me is you didn't want to get as sober as much as I did because I was a Jewish kid and I did it on my knees. You know what I mean? You know, I gave my life to Christ on my knees and I'm a Jewish kid. Let me tell you something. And it may be simple for you. It wasn't simple for me, but you wanted something? I would do anything to stop drinking. I would do anything to stop drinking. So I hear a lot of people saying, well, I wouldn't do that and I wouldn't do this. You know something? You don't know what you would do when you're desperate. And I'll tell you, the only thing, I never rob an alcoholic of his desperation. I never rob an alcoholic of his last drink. You don't know what you're doing if you're desperate. And I'll tell you something, if there are things you wouldn't do to get in here, then you are not as desperate as I am. And that's okay. You can walk out the door. The old days, they didn't worry about that stuff. They didn't argue with people. They said, why don't you try some controlled drinking? Because they knew you would come back because there's no other place to go with a different attitude. An attitude would maybe keep you sober for 31 years and have you experience this stuff. You're not doing anyone any favors, you know, allowing them to just skate along and be a dilettante in here. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bobby, who came to AA in February of 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and that your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps, he said. We called that the surrender. They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over at the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. All the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive that experience, an experience like that. A regular old-fashioned prayer meeting, said Dorothy, who was then married to an AA member, Clarence S., that's Clarence Snyder, the brewmaster, and later came to AA herself. She died in 1971. The newcomers surrendered in the presence of all those other people. After the surrender, many of the steps involving inventory, admission of character defects, and making restitution were taken within a matter of days. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. We think we're following their path. You think we're doing what they're doing? You ought to read this book. Nobody's going to force you to do any of this stuff, but you need to read this book. So somewhere down the road, when things aren't working out for you and you don't have that permanent emotional and physical and spiritual sobriety, and you don't have that deal going on for you, and it's up and down, and it's up and down, and it's problematic, maybe it'll occur to you, well, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there was something, maybe they were doing something different. Maybe you can see what was really going on in here. We in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. Can you, you know, the great thing about AA is this is a giant funnel. Nobody's going to give you any doctrine or tell you you've got to believe in anything. That's the great thing. I'll defend your right to say anything you want, just like I'll defend my right to say anything I want about my experience. You can get another guy up here tomorrow and say God's a doorknob. That's fine with you if you don't think he's a deity. Okay, if you think that's what it's incredible. It's incredible what I guess these people did or didn't know. It's incredible what the alcoholic mind can think of and how the alcoholic mind can manipulate words and phrases to somehow manage to allow it to rationally tell itself rational lies, hang on to the old ideas that they're in charge, that they're God, that there is no... It's amazing the things that we can tell ourselves and the bullshit that we'll buy into so that we can feel like we're doing this program, we're not doing anything like this program. So here's the deal. It says, if you believe God's a light bulb, and that's what they're talking about, it says right here, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, and color, are the children of a living creator. As long as you believe you were created by a light bulb or a tree, you know what I mean? You can believe anything you want. But I've read this book, and I'm a wordsmith, and I've studied this book, and I know what they're talking about. And that they're not goofing around. And either you got to live in the truth with this deal. What does it say? It says, a constitutionally capable of being honest. You either start getting honest with yourself or playing AA make-believe. It's easy to play AA make-believe. Because that way you can do it the way you want to do it. And not be obedient. And do it your way. Because I'm an individual. That's why I said to my sponsor, I said, well, this is my personality. And he said, well, your personality is killing you. You better do something about that. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Those having religious affiliations will find nothing disturbing in our beliefs and ceremonies. There is no friction among us over such matters. We think of no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify with as individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair, which each one decides for himself in light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. These were not people that put down religions. You know, when we say I'm spiritual, not religious, well, you're a better man than I, because I'm the farthest thing from spiritual. I'm an alcoholic. I know exactly what I am. You take me away from meetings, you scratch me, yeah, I'm coming after you. If spirituality is some sort of quality that you develop here, I don't have it. I never have had it. I've never owned that quality. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered in the extreme. Just don't go to meetings. Don't pray. Don't talk to your sponsor and you see how you've acquired spirituality. In the book I read, Alcoholics Anonymous, when they talk about spirituality, it's never talked about except when it's talked about vis-a-vis a relationship with God and looking to him and doing his will. Somehow God's always in the picture there. Whatever spirituality, whatever you see about me, if there's anything about me that you see about me that's in any way attractive or something you like or something you think is not alcoholic, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the image of him and his power working in me. He has been doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I take no credit for anything decent that's involved in me, you know, that's going on in my life. I take no credit. I give all credit to him because for 31 years I was in charge of my life and I know exactly who I am. I know exactly who I was. I know exactly what I did. I know who I really am. I don't fool myself in saying I'm spiritual. You know what I am? If any spiritual I have is to the degree that I want to get close to him and do his work well and talk about him. And because of the things, the incredible things he's done for me, because of these promises, I've lost fear of people and of economic security. Not 100%, not perfectly, but to a great extent, which allows me to be transparent and talk to people about this and not worry about what the guy in the back row, whether he's going to like me or not, because I'm tired of living a life worrying about what they're thinking about me and what I said and who I am and worried about whether they'll like me or not. My whole life was, there could be 1,000 people that love me. If one guy doesn't like me, what's the matter? What did I do? Why doesn't he like me? I'm tired of living my life hostage to what I think you're going to, whether you're going to like me, whether you're not going to like me. But how do you get rid of that when it just seems embedded in you? And God will do that for you. That's what it says. It says selfishness and self-centeredness. He says the wrongdoings of others, fancy to real, imagining stuff, it'll kill us. Above all, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. You don't make that possible. Your thinking doesn't make that possible. God makes that possible. One of the stories I told him, I might have told it already, but I'm going to tell it again because it has to do with a spiritual principle that I think is very important here. And it's the story about my former wife who, when I was married for 5 years, had a beautiful son, beautiful house, and everything. She was a beautiful gal. She was a wonderful gal. She really was. Never did anything wrong. Said to me, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. It was a Friday morning. I was probably more physically sober than I am now. I don't know. I was sober. I know I was thinking better. You know, I often say I came today, I had two neurons working. They were waving goodbye to each other, you know, and I was younger, you know, 100 pounds lighter. And I was leaving for work, and she didn't want to start an argument or anything. She just said, hey, listen, I just want you to know, you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. You know, I guess she wasn't a codependent, you know, and she had enough of that crap. And you know, that statement is about as clear as you can get. That's like when the judge says, I see you again one more time, you're going to jail. You know, that's the kind of statements, you know, that people tell you, which are bright lights, but if you're like Britney Spears or me, you always wind up in front of the judge anyway. Scratch your head saying, I don't understand what's going on here. So she says to me, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I walked out the door. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I got in my car. I drove 2 blocks. I got to the light. I go, what the hell she mean by that? Okay, that leads me now. Well, let me tell you something. You could be the smartest guy. I was a division chief of the state's attorney's office. I was a trial attorney trying murder cases. You know, I had all sorts of degrees on the wall. You gotta have 140 IQ. Let me tell you something. If you don't understand the statement, if you don't appreciate what the statement means, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. If that like baffles you, you're in for a difficult life somewhere down the road. You know, there's something, you're like an idiot savant. You can make a lot of money, you're smart and letter, there's like an area that you're like blank on. You know, and what I've learned from that, and this is true because I've worked with really hundreds of men, you know, as sponsees and grand sponsees, is that whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, reads, or is told anything he doesn't like, it confuses him. It does. It confuses him. Or he gets angry and he makes it go away, which explains why at 15 years or at 20 years or at 5 years, I could be reading this book that I've read all along and all of a sudden for the first time see something that I never saw before. I said, where did that come from? And I know I've read it a million, because when I first read it, I didn't like it. It confused me. It made me mad. So I made it go away and I went to the next thing. So I'm absolutely sure when I first read this book, while I'm in this group and saying the Serenity Prayer and everything, when I first read this entire book, this whole thing with the charts and the thing and what it says, what does it say right after the third step prayer? It says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Well, that sort of confused me and got mad, so I just went on to the next one. We found the very desire, you know. I'm sure after I was done reading this, the first month or the first year, and they asked me, what's AA about? I would say, well, it's about this. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. Absolutely. Well, you got to turn yourself over to God? No, it's really like optional, you know what I mean? You don't worry about the God thing, you know. Is God important? No, God, it's not optional. It's about acceptance. And I'm quite sure that I stayed sober for 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous just reciting the first part of the Serenity Prayer. Except, you know, well, if God wanted me to have a job, I guess he'd shoot one down to the sunset room, you know what I mean? And Well, I guess they're doing this. I just have to accept that. It's easy to accept. You just sort of accept and you accept. And you go to meetings and you accept and you accept. And after a while, you say, hey, man, this is pretty good, this acceptance thing. And every once in a while, some idiot guy with a lot of years says, well, maybe you ought to go out looking for a job, you know, but that requires courage. And I'm not on that second part, and I didn't like that guy anyway. And what does he know? He's stupid. You know what I mean? You know, I shouldn't have to go out and look for a job. It should come to me. You know what I mean? Because that's scary, and I'm scared, and I'd rather not do it. And, you know, maybe like I'll win the lottery or something like that. And, you know, and but, you know, after you get pounded a couple of times and pounded and pounded and life pounds you and you whine and you cry and you get a sponsor who knows what he's doing. Next thing you know, you're on the second part of the Serenity Prayer. Next thing you know, you see other things in the book. And all of a sudden, the book starts opening up and gets bigger and bigger. And you see that somewhere down the road, after getting pounded and like they say in the seventh step, how we get a new perspective through 100 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. And we see that there's a great value in suffering, you know, because it was for us, it was all about things and stuff. And finally, we see it's not about that stuff. It's all about him. See the relation with him. Somehow, by going through all the grind that you go through life, that life supplies, the constant, the humiliations, the pounding down, the things that we think are bad, that we used to drink over to run away from, we realize that if we go through them and we have God on our side and we have this faith that we develop, somehow the worst situations, cancer, whatever, we go through them, we get to the other side, and all of a sudden we're reading this book and it's much bigger and it's much broader. It means so much more things. And all of a sudden we've developed something we don't even need, some sort of strength, some incredible strength that allows us to get through life. And all of a sudden, you're not whining, you're not crying, stuff isn't bothering you, you're not botherable, and people looking at you like you're sober and asking you to sponsor them and things like that, and ask you how did this end, you don't even know how it happened. Well, you know, you went through a lot of crap that you didn't like, and you would have preferred to drink over it or run away or go to Brazil or something like that, and you went through it and you prayed and you didn't know how that helped, and you did all this stuff and you've changed and you can't even take credit for it because you don't know what happened. You woke up one day and you don't know whether it happened on Wednesday or Thursday, but somehow at this point you don't care what other people think about you anymore. And you're not worried about the money. And it took 20 years. It was a hard road, but you know something, hey, now you got it. And thank God for that. And you know where it came from, because by that point you realize it is about God. You realize what the deal is. And then you try to tell people that in Amy, he says, we don't want to hear that crap. So you just wait around for 10 or 15 years before, you know, because, you know, alcohol is the great purger. I mean, thank God for alcohol. Can you imagine what this place would look like if everybody stayed sober and nobody drank? Even the craziest guys in the bunch? You wouldn't be able to get a word in edgewise. And so it sort of like purges itself out and cleans the room out and everything like a giant vacuum cleaner, you know, the alcoholism. And, you know, you just wait around until people are ready to hear the message. And when the pupil's ready, you know, they'll hear the message. The teacher will appear. And they hear what they're supposed to hear. So a guy calls me up the other day and he asks me for help. So he's got 24. I sponsor a lot of guys with 20 years, 24 years, you know, 50, you know. You wouldn't think they need help because they know the AA deal. They know how to talk AA, and they're picking up the medallions, of course. And so he asked me for help. And you know, when you got 24 years sober, your problem isn't alcohol. It's something called alcoholism, which, quite frankly, only strikes when you're not drinking. You see, because you understand that alcoholism is something that you experience when you're not drinking, when you're sober. You don't experience alcoholism when you're drinking. Drinking is but a symptom of our disease. You see, I drank alcohol so I wouldn't experience alcoholism. You see, if you're an alcoholic, you're restless, you're irritable, you're discontented. No matter what's going on in your life, no matter how good it is, it ends up being crap. You know, you're thinking bad thoughts about yourself and other people all the time. And somehow, some way, when alcoholism raises its ugly head and you see it 5 miles away, before it even gets here, you say, hey, pull the car over. I need a drink. And so what you do is you pop a couple of drinks and you chase that alcoholism away. And no woman, no car, no amount of money just worked for me quite as well as just a few drinks. That's why I drank it. I drank it so I wouldn't have to experience alcoholism. And you drink it enough, you get physically addicted to stuff, and they call you an alcoholic because they think that's what alcoholism is, because it seems to have something to do with alcohol. But they don't realize that the reason you're an alcoholic is because the only drug that works to get rid of the alcoholism is alcohol. So we name the disease after the drug that we like best that chases away the alcoholism. And then we get rid of the alcohol and we think we're cured, and we don't realize that unfortunately we still have the alcoholism. But it's not alcoholism, it's like selfishism, or it's something, or it's like I need stuffism. or I want sexism, or, you know, I'm greedyism, or why don't I have that carism, or when am I going to have a guy, when am I going to have a gal, when am I going to have this, or what is my, it's about all sorts of isms, all sorts of stuff, but it has nothing to do with drinking, it has to do with our thinking. But how can you get rid of your thinking when this is the way I've always thought? I don't even know I'm thinking crazy. I don't even know what crazy is. This is constantly the way I think. And then I run into some guy here who's got 30 years, and he tells me to think this way and do this way, and that sounds like crazy to me. How do I even get to the point where I do that? You know how many years I had to drink, and there were signs, and people were telling me, like, my ex-wife had a drink before I exploded and finally realized I had a problem with alcohol? How many times can you have a problem with greed and lust and coveting and all the other crap and self-centeredness and fear? You know, I mean, you know, you go on your entire life and never even understand that problem. They don't arrest you for driving while coveting. You know? They don't arrest you for driving. They don't arrest you, you know, like for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. You can hold a job down. You can drive a car. You can raise kids. You can do all sorts of stuff and live a miserable life. A life of quiet desperation. And never come to the point where it gets that bad. And then you go to AA, and what happens is AA actually becomes an enabler to enable you to be horrible. Because you can go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, they pat you on the back, they make you feel good, they give you a medallion, you got one more year, you got 5 years, and you feel as miserable as you did before, you know, and you say, well, I must be doing okay because I haven't had a drink. And you are. You are. You know, if you're an alcoholic and you haven't had a drink, let me tell you something, you're a success. But could you be doing better? Is there other things out there? Is everybody experiencing this like you're experiencing this? Isn't there another way? Doesn't it say somewhere in our book that that we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed? The great fact is this and nothing less, which I think means it's nothing less. And it's the great fact. If you're going to read this book, if you're going to be part of this program, wouldn't you want to know the great fact? What if it said the great fact is this, and then the rest of the page was blank? And nothing less, and then the rest of the page was blank. Who would you pay? What would you do? How much money have you paid psychiatrists just to find the answer? I want the answer. And all of a sudden you get out of treatment, and you're not drinking, and you get this book and say, here, this book has the answer. And you read, the great fact is this, and nothing less. And then all of a sudden that page is cut out. Every book you go to, that page is cut out. The great fact is this and nothing less. And the page is cut out and you can't see what it is. And you realize, somebody says, well, what's the great fact? He says, well, you're not allowed to know the great fact unless you got 25 years. Well, that's not fair. I paid for the house. He says, I'm sorry. That's the way it works. You got to survive this. And then they tell you the great. They say you won't appreciate the great fact. If you know, you'll skip by it. You'll get pissed off about the great fact. You know what I mean? So you're sort of like, you know, like alcoholics do. You figure you'll pay somebody. So you see a couple of guys, they look like old timers. So you sit by them and you sort of like make believe you got like 25 years. You know what I mean? And then somewhere during the conversation, you say, hey, what about that great fact thing? You know, wow, that's really. But you ain't fooling them because, you know, they can tell you don't know the great fact because, you know. Because people who know the great fact don't talk like that, you know what I mean? And they sort of look at you and say, why don't you get out of here, you know? And you got the great fact. It's there right there and you don't even know what it is. And you don't even think about the great fact. And even if you thought about it, you don't even think it means what it means. It says the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Now listen to this. Listen to this. Have you ever actually read this book? No, you think you've read this book. Here's what you've done. You've read this book and you've skipped over this part. Or you've read this book and said this part isn't important. Now, you can write New York and tell them that there's a guy killing newcomers here. His name's Russell Spatz. And he's reading the big book to them. And he's going to destroy Alcoholics Anonymous. Because he's pissing some people off. The central fact of our lives today, which means, by the way, the central fact of your life today. It's not your car, it's not your husband, it's not your wife, it's not whether you have a boyfriend, it's not whether you're going on vacation, it's not your dress size, it's not whether or not you got, you know, I'll put it this way, it's not the stuff you talk or think about most of the time. It's not the stuff you hear in discussion meetings, it's not the stuff you're even going to think about as you drive away from here. It's not the stuff that you deal with and you focus on all the time, you know, because you're not focusing on the central fact. And I'm not pointed at anyone in particular here, but I'm saying you examine yourself. Is this your central fact? And once you understand this, you'll understand what this book is all about. You'll understand what they mean when they say, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You'll understand what they're talking about, what this book is really about. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty. That's not what I think of. The absolute certainty that our Creator has entered, and that's with a capital C, it's a deity. Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He, God, has commenced to accomplish things for us which we could never do for ourselves. That's the central fact. And in a person's life who has done this thing, has latched hold of this thing, have realized all the promises in his life, has grown in the image and likeness of his Creator, is realizing the incredible gifts of this. That's the central fact of that person's life. That was the central fact of my sponsor's life. All my sponsors, that was their central fact. It wasn't about what am I doing Saturday night or the gal or anything like that. It was all about him. It was all about him. It says at the very end of this book, it says, on vision for you. Right here. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. He will even show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He, if you focus on him alone, will show you exactly who to hang out with and who not to hang out with. And you want to know something? If you focus on him and you talk about him and you're involved with him, you'll know who to hang out with, you know who not to hang out with, and who you hang out with is going to determine the conversations you have and the conversations you have even when you're not hanging out with him, because whatever conversation you're having with your friends right now, that's the conversation you're having with yourself in your car as you're driving away. And it's all about stuff and things. And it never made you feel good and it'll never work. It never has worked. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear the way of the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We're with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. There's a lot of people that are in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because the only requirement to be in here is the desire to stop drinking, and it doesn't even have to be an honest desire. And we have people that are in here, believe it or not, that don't even have a desire to do that. But there's a big difference between having a desire to stop drinking and have a desire to join the fellowship of the Spirit, which comes from one of the letters of Paul's letters, the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. As I was doing this thing, one of the books I read, you know, it's, you know, because it says we know only a little, he'll constantly disclose. So I read Tozer's book, Pursuit of God. It's a great book. You don't have to read it. It's non-conference approved. Of course, there's no conference disapproved. You understand that, don't you? There's no such thing as conference disapproved. But in any event, I want to read this little statement, and then just suggest. I want to read something. Just two things to you. It'll take a couple minutes. And if you go to step three in the big book, if I could find step three on page. Okay, here it is.
Top page.
This is on page 62. This is the how and why of it. We had to quit playing God. I didn't even know what playing God was. You know, it goes back to the A, B's, and C's, that we're alcoholics and cannot manage our own lives. What does it say? We're alcoholics and we cannot manage. What does it say? We're alcoholics, we cannot manage our own lives. Right? No human power could relieve that. God couldn't would if he was sought. And then it says right after that, we're on step three. You know what it says? Being convinced of that, we're on step three. Being convinced we're ready for step. That we cannot manage our own lives. And here's what happens for the first 10 years in this program. You read that at every meeting. It's said at every meeting. We're alcoholics. We cannot manage our own lives. No human power could relieve that. God couldn't. And here's what happens. You walk out of here. You walk into your car. You get into your car. You get on your cell phone. And you start managing your life. You start thinking about your life. You start thinking about things. You start thinking about who to call, what to do, what to be, who should you say, call up your sponsor, what should I say to this, what should I do that. And your whole life is trying to figure out how to manage your life so that you will win and come out on top and you won't lose and you won't get hurt. until you get to your next, and drive yourself crazy with the committee until you get to your next meeting and you read, you cannot manage your own life, you say the serenity prayer, you feel better again, you know, it must have something to do with God or something, and then you go out in the insane world with the billboards and the things and the stuff and the breast implants. I'm stuck on that. I got to tell you, I'm stuck on that because I was driving along the highway by the collection, and there's this huge sign, I think I talked about this, with this beautiful gal, beautiful body, beautiful bathing suit, you know, with the breast sticking out, it says breast implants. And, you know, of course, guys are looking at that saying, oh, if I only had that gal, you know? And girls are looking at that and says, if I only had those breasts, you know what I mean? And, you know, or if I only had that, even if you had the breasts, if I only had the bathing suit, you know what I mean? And I start looking at the billboards because I, you know, when you're spiritually discerned, and I start looking at the TV commercials that we hit all the time, Viagra and KY and everything, and it says, and the entire world is designed to show how insufficient I am, you know what I mean? No matter how much I have, there's another billboard, there's another romantic comedy. It's, you know, they're doing 15,000 takes, you know, when a director and a script to make some movie star look wonderful and perfect. And I'm saying, why can't I be like? Why can't my life be like? My whole world is designed to show me what a nothing I am. And if you don't think that affects you as an alcoholic, you're crazy. That's why they have all those, you know, those magazine covers with guys with Courvoisier, you know, glasses, with a beautiful gal, you know, with a bearskin rug, you know, with a fireplace going. Oh, if I only had that. And we run around managing our lives trying to get that because we know we'll get it. And then we come in here, we got an hour in here to say, you know, God couldn't would if you, so we feel good for 5 minutes. Then we're out managing our lives again. How many years does it take to finally realize that you can't manage your own life? First of all, you're scared not to manage your life because you know something bad's going to happen to you because you're so scared. It's the cross of fear that runs through your life. How many years does it take to realize that there's no human power? Not your wife, not your husband, not some man, not some woman, not some romantic is going to do the deal. How many years does it take to realize that only God could and would if he were sought? How many years does it take to get serious and realize I really need to get involved with God? Does it take cancer? Does it really take cancer? The man who has God for all his, the man who has God for his treasure has all things in one. Many ordinary treasures may be denied him. Or if he is allowed to have them, the enjoyment of them will be so tempered that they will never be so necessary to his happiness. Or if he must see them go one after one, he will scarcely feel a sense of loss. For having the source of all things, he has in one all satisfaction, all pleasure, and all delight. Whatever he may lose, he has actually lost nothing. For he has it all. He has it all in the one, and he has it purely, legitimately, and forever. I just want to take 30 seconds to tell you just a story. A guy asked me, I started telling you this story. I hate when I do that. I start telling the story and then I skip it. So he's got 24 years, so he calls me up and he asks me for help. And I know this guy, and whenever I'm with him, all he talks about is women. Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. There are women that all they'll talk about is men. They come up to me after meetings, they say, do you sponsor women? I say, you need a woman sponsor. And they say, I don't do well with women. I say, that's your problem. That's your problem. Your problem, that you've just disclosed your problem. Your problem is you have a problem with men. You worship men. A man's not going to solve your problem, never has, never will. You know, you got to find a woman. Help you out. So in any event, the bottom line is... You remind me of my current wife. not the nice one. You know what I mean? Okay. But in any event, the story, you're nervous, you gotta go, so you gotta go manage something. Okay, well here's the deal. You gotta go take care of business. I got you. So in any event, so the guy says to me, so the guy, well, you know, it's pretty, you know, when you're hanging around this room for 30 years and you're hanging around with the people I hang out with, who talk about the conversations they converse with and the things they talk about, and all of a sudden you got a guy with 24 years, you know, and all he does is talk about women, you know, women, women, women. He says, I got a problem. What's wrong with my life? It's pretty easy to focus in on the fact that he probably needs some spiritual development. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. So I suggest to him that he do certain things. You ever try to suggest things to an alcoholic? It's really tough, especially when they got a lot of time. You know, it has to do like, you know, going to Bible study, going back to church, doing the stuff that they actually suggest to do in the book. When you're free, you're in your 60s and you got 24 years. But believe it or not, it's possible to have a 60-year-old man, you know, who has the emotional development of a 13-year-old. You know? And So he called me up the other day. So the bottom line is he's still feeling kind of lousy, but he's mad at me now. He's mad at me. He wants me to stop pushing this stuff on him, you know? And all I said to him is, I said, hey, listen, you asked me. I didn't ask you. And what you need to understand, and the point I'm trying to say is this, this thing takes time to develop. I understand that. I honestly appreciate that. I don't want anybody to think, God, I hope I don't give I can't be like I was when I had 2 days or 3 days. I mean, I got what I got, and this is what I got, and I got to disclose what I have. But I understand that I don't expect somebody with 2 days or 3 days to understand everything or even buy into everything I'm saying. I just understand that this is my job to be transparent and talk about what's working for me now. But these things take time. These things work on you. And it's probably the truth, what I just said, that even though we read the A, B's, and C's and we mouth them, and maybe we sort of somehow believe that God has something to do with it and we should have more faith, we probably do spend the first 10 years staying sober, just trying to stay sober one day at a time and trying to gather up all the stuff we can in our lives so that we'll be okay until we realize something's wrong and it's not working and we start changing around. You know, maybe it is sort of like an old-timer type of thing. Or maybe you do have to wait until you get cancer or get a little bit older where all the other stuff in the world are not that, the new car isn't that important anymore and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It always amazes me when 18-year-olds and 19s and 20-year-olds start getting this stuff and start focusing on God. You know, that's an amazing thing. Maybe that's the truth, but just understand one thing. Like this guy, whenever somebody is trying to focus you in this direction, your natural inclination is going to be to get mad at it, to get upset. When people are giving you life, the thing that's going to change, that you've been looking for you all your life, you spend money on psychiatrists and pills and everything, all your life, to get what's freely given in this book, trust me, you'll be wanting me to get on with it because you got more important things to do. You'll miss it. You understand? That's the nature of this disease. To be able to sit still for about 30 seconds and no longer and say, look, I got other things I got to do. You understand what I'm saying? That's the disease. That's not sobriety. Thank you very much. God bless you.